Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaritamastu Mavidivishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 95. Verses 16 to 26. King Chitraketu accepts the curse and asks Mother Parvati's forgiveness. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, My dear King Parikit, when Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati, he descended from his airplane, bowed before her with great humility, and pleased her completely. Chitraketu said, My dear mother, with my own hands folded together, I accept the curse upon me. I do not mind the curse, for happiness and distress are given by the demigods as a result of one's past deeds. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, I accept this curse. There is no harm in accepting this curse, since I have not offended you or Shiva. And there is no fault in your cursing me, though I am innocent. I am simply receiving my karma. The devotee should feel like this out of humility. Actually, however, the devotee who has developed prema has no trace of karma at all. For even from the stage previous to prema, all karmas are destroyed. Bhiyate hridaya grantis chidyante sarva samshaya. Chidyante chasya karamani drishta evatmanishvare. Ignorance is cut and all doubts are destroyed. On seeing the Lord in the mind and with the eyes, all karmas are destroyed. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.21. The Lord could not be controlled by bhakti if the devotee still had karma. One who is under the control of karma does not control the Lord. In order to announce the great strength of the devotee seeing equally curses, blessings, swarga, liberation, and hell, in order to remove the improper life of Chitraketu as the leader of the Vidyadharas, in order to increase Chitraketu's hunger for prema by the fire of separation, in order to bestow the enjoyment of great sweetness of direct service to his lotus feet in Vaikuntha, Sankarsana inspired Devi to curse him, out of affection as a father. That is the conclusion. This will be understood from seeing the results, right? So these other aspects on whether she should have cursed, whether he should have, you know, insulted, all these things, whether it was a curse, whether it wasn't an insult, those aren't actually the main points. It means we learn from them. But the point is the Lord's arrangement, because the Lord was trying to increase his love for him and bring him back to Godhead as quickly as possible.
Yes. The Lord could not be controlled by bhakti, the devotees still have karma.
Because then if there's karma, then you're still interested in the material world, so then how would there be, how could we control him?
It's the question of desire.
Yes. No, it's not a matter of that one is having the results of, because otherwise we have this body. And so we say then you can't, you know, control. It's a matter of there's no more material desire. So that's the point, is that the pure devotee, there's no more material desire. Therefore, the Lord is controlled by that.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. When you say the Lord is controlled,
yes,
it means that He wants to do what the devotee wants to do. It's not like he is obliged or something.
No, it's out of affection that he gets involved. You're thinking it's a very thin backpack. No, because it's very, either he didn't bring anything or they're very thin study guides.
Thin study guide, and there's not so many of us.
Okay. There was an anxiety there. Because normally you come in with this very big backpack. Does that make sense? Yeah.
No more karma.
No more karma. Okay. So this is the Vishwanath Chakravarti. This is the conclusion, right? This will be understood from seeing the results because he'll develop that prema and all that. Oh, thank you. End part. Right. So all these other considerations are not the main points. They may be points to, you know, just see etiquette and dealings and, you know, everything like that. So how we see how Chitraketu dealt, you know, his view, how he was seeing, how he dealt, all these different things. That was all done by, that we can learn from. But now whether that's a problem, whether it's not, this and that, that's another thing. That's another question. Does that make sense? Okay. Ching Chitraketu. I don't know where that comes from. Oh, maybe from Yi King? I mean, that's what they say in English, but I heard that in the original. How do you say where? Where is she? Oh, there. How do you say, means, in English we say I Ching. How do you say it in Chinese? Huh? I Ching. Okay, means all the different. Yeah, you have the full one, you have the part one, and like then there's three of them, and then there's one above, one below. Yeah, okay. I Ching. Chitraketu continued, deluded by ignorance, the living entity wanders in the forest of this material world, enjoying the happiness and distress resulting from his past deeds, everywhere and at all times. Therefore, my dear mother, neither you nor I am to be blamed for this incident. In this material world, neither the living entity himself nor others, friends and enemies, are the cause of material happiness and distress. But because of gross ignorance, the living entity thinks that he and the others are the cause. 18 to 19, Srila Prabhupada comments. In this verse, the word agya is very significant. In the material world, all living entities are agya, ignorant, in different degrees. This ignorance continues very strongly in the mode of ignorance presented by material nature. One must, right, so in other words, there's the overall ignorance of our relationship with the Lord, right? That's the original thing, and that we're the controller and enjoyer. Then there's the specifics that's nicely cultivated by the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? Because that's a practical application. It means there's the situation. In other words, our existence in the material world is based on ignorance. Right? Then there's how we act and all that. So that will be then under the mode of ignorance or passion. Right? Does that make sense? Even in goodness, there's still the ignorance of our relationship with the Lord. Does that make sense?
Like you're saying that inside we have the Maya and then outside, it's the same connected.
Inside Maya and outside?
Like Maya is within us and we are within Maya.
Oh, I see. Yes. Srila Prabhupada okay. This ignorance continues very strongly in the mode of ignorance presented by material nature. One must therefore promote himself to the stage of goodness through his character and behavior, and then gradually come to the transcendental platform. Right? So character and behavior, because the mind is going to work on these finer qualities. Then you're going to have the action that you perform with those qualities. This makes sense? Right? So that's where we cultivate, because if you change the viewpoint of the mind, the subtle body, then you change what you do. So that's why we look at that. Now the modern thing where everybody just looks at skills, right? And then the political correctness of the mind that's based on how well I'll be able to perform those skills, you know, in the political sense. This is not progressive at all. the Vedic is, as you look at the qualities of the mind, what are the qualities that are supposed to be used? Right? This is defined by Shastra, not by what's popular at the time. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what's going to be elevating. We try to do that. So therefore we situate yourself in goodness and then cultivate this proper behavior and qualities. Because goodness means these are the duties I'm supposed to perform. Then the duties themselves are straightforward because it's obvious what we're supposed to do. But then we focus on the qualities required to perform them. Because to perform them, there's going to be tolerance, there's going to be humility, there's going to be all these qualities have to be there. Right? But otherwise, the modern, you just focus on the skill. But the Vedic is no, the skill is not the main part in your endeavor. It's going to be the subtler part of the qualities. So therefore, you try to do that. From that, then, doing that for Krishna, you'll elevate yourself to the transcendental platform. Right? But if we're doing things, the mentality is defined by what does the modern think, then that's going to be the mode of passion and ignorance. And then we're not going to get to the transcendental platform. Because we're not doing things that we're supposed to, we're doing things that because we want to. Right? So we're actually talking about the evil twin of spontaneous devotional service. Right? Spontaneous devotional service means here's the rules and then I'm inspired to do it. The evil twin is, this is what I'm inspired to do, these are the rules. You understand? So that's the problem with the modern way of thinking. It absolutely has nothing to do with devotional service. It sounds really good, because in doing so, we will talk about character and behavior and all those nice things. But they're not defined by duty, they're not defined by the Lord. They're just defined by whatever is felt at the moment. Does that make sense? That's all. And that changes from moment to moment. Right? So that's why you see there's a group of people there. There's a general way of thinking, a general, you know, sense of community. Whoever's the leader in that, how they respond, everybody else responds to that. And if someone thinks differently, then it'll be looked at as, you know, that they don't understand what's going on. So it'll simply be whoever's leading this politically correct charge, whatever they do, everybody else has to fall in line, otherwise you're wrong. Right? Does that make sense? So if we look at it in real time on where that is, you know, known to be the really prominent way things work, it's called high school. And so, you know, does that make sense? So just because one's older, you know, and has responsible positions in society, doesn't mean it's still not a high school way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Yes. 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 So that's the point, is that there is, in Krishna consciousness, no dogma. Because there's no point we can't discuss. But there is etiquette. So there's ways to discuss those points. You understand? In other words, we're not offensive in our discussion of the points, but there's no point that we can't discuss. So much of the time people want to discuss a particular point, but they want to do so without etiquette. And then if you try to correct that, then it's seen as dogma. But actually, no. We'll discuss, you know, how Krishna is God, or how the jiva exists or not, or what's the position of guru, what's transcendent, what's the material. We have no problem discussing that. But there has to be the proper attitude. Otherwise, how one will learn? Because revelation comes from Krishna. So if the mood's not right, why we will gain that? Because if the mood's not right, we're working under the lower modes. Goodness is, what is the knowledge? What am I supposed to do? So we see that human life begins with that, atato brahma jigyasa. Right? Who am I? What am I supposed to do? Not, I am this, and this is what I'm going to do. That's not the first sutra. Right? Even Jaimini, for karma, you know, his atato karma jigyasa. Right? Now is the time to inquire about what is the proper duties to perform. So therefore, now is the time I'm going to do what I want, that's kind of down in the, you know, how you say, the annals of animalistic sutras, like that. But we say it nicely, it's refined, then everybody thinks it's great. This is the illusion. You know what I'm saying? Like I take, one has a dog, right? Dog does dog stuff. Now I take the dog down to the, you know, how you say, dog pampering, you know, place, and they give the dog a nice shampoo, you know, they give it a bit of a buzz, you know, put a little poof on the end of the tail and a few on the feet, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then bring it out. Now the dog is something fabulous. You know, now it's a, you know, social accessory, right? But it's still a dog, and it's still going to do the same things. So that's all. So this modern sophisticated society is basically a poodle, right? That's all. You know, it's not a bulldog. It's a poodle. And so it's so much superior to a bulldog, right? Poodles don't slobber as much, right? Right? Okay. Okay. And gradually come to the transcendental platform, or adhoksaja platform, which he realizes both his position and the position of others, right? Adhoksaja is that platform of liberation, right? In the five levels of realization, then we're talking about the fourth level, right? So anamoya is the lowest, that's just the senses. Pranamoya is what we just discussed about the modern way of thinking and all this high school, you know, kind of social norms. Then when it says provoke myself to the mode of goodness, means then you're going to follow duties. And we're going to do that through the proper attitudes, right? That will bring us to the platform of adhoksija, or to the platform of vijnanamoya. Right? So when we perform dharma, we follow the qualities properly, try to cultivate, that will be manamoya. Right? Then we use the tool of vijnanamoya. Then from there, that will get us to the position of anandamaya. Right? So it's all being done for Krishna, that's why it's progressive. Right? The karmis use dharma also and develop the qualities, but they use it for artha and kama. Right? So these are all tools. It's a matter of which way you take it. So dharma is the central point. That means human. Below that is not human. Humans may engage in activities that are below human, but the point is it has to be coming from the stage of dharma. If we take below human and then try to claim that this is a reliable and a standard way of doing things, then we've missed the whole point of, you know, what the philosophy is discussing. Right? Then it's just a social movement. It says that if we wanted a social movement, there's plenty of them. And you don't have to follow all these regs and stuff, you know? Does that make sense? We can, you know, can join Amnesty International. No regs, you know? And they'll probably get a lot more social stuff done. We've joined this movement to actually become spiritual. So, you know, does that make sense? So we should know, you know, what is the movement. You know, don't join the ski club and, you know, wonder where's the rollerblading, you know? How come there's no pool tables here? You know, it's like, you know, that's not what it's for. Everything is done under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The process by which the results of action are ordained is called niyatam, always working. So the Lord is carrying out. We perform an action, then through the Lord's energies, this is all being carried out. So the reactions that we get are all, you know, some are from now, some are from previous, some are from really previous, like this. So that kind of thing's carried out by the demigods. So ultimately, the soul's not involved. That's why at every moment you can pull out. This idea is know that you're going to be labeled with this, branded on your forehead, you know. Then somehow or another, in our modernity, we're so medieval. Right? You know, really medieval. But that's the fun part, is you use nice words and it doesn't sound medieval. Right? Okay, Chitraketu continued. This material world resembles the waves of a constantly flowing river. Therefore, what is a curse and what is a favor? Right? Because whatever it is, you get a favor, it'll go away. If you get a curse, it'll go away. Right? I think that's basically what we're discussing before. Is the I Ching. That's the if it's nice, don't get too enthusiastic. You know, don't get too jubilant because it will go bad. You know, it'll go away. And if it's bad, don't lament because it'll go away. Basically, that's all it says, just in a million different ways. But you know, does that make sense? What are the heavenly planets and what are the hellish planets? What is actually happiness? And what is actually distress? Because the waves flow constantly, none of them has an eternal effect. Right? Indra's in heaven, the demons walk in, kick him out. Right? In one moment he's sitting enjoying, everyone's offering prayers and service, and he's so that Brihaspati walks in, he ignores him. You know, and then the next moment he's in total anxiety. Right? Does that make sense? Then he gets to Narayana Kavach, and then they're, you know, so powerful and all this, and then he kills his guru in that one, and then there's distress again. You understand? So that's the problem, is that, is this real happiness? Is this, you know, what is hell, heaven? What is hell? Right? Does that make sense? Right. Yes.
We say that there's no eternal damnation in our theology.
Yes. That's our theology. That doesn't mean that the modern doesn't, how you say, support such concepts.
Yeah.
Yes.
What about the Chota Haridas?
What about Chota Haridas? And that was eternal? Where did it say it was eternal?
It said that he never wanted to see him again. So, but then he could ask for so many lifetimes, that was not him.
And then what would Lord Chaitanya do down at the beach in the evening? Yeah. So the point is it's just, it makes the point. It's just like, okay, husband says something stupid, and then what is the length of time that we say yes, you know. Yeah, I'm never going to talk to you again. Are we going to say, I'm not going to talk to you for 27 and a half minutes? Is that going to get any effect? No. You say, I'm not talking to you ever again. That gets some effect. Though after 27 and a half minutes, then you're talking. Right? We're talking a light one. Then there's the 3 day, just to make sure.
Never happens again.
Yes. That's for, you know, in other words, that's that. But if it happens, then it's going to be the 3 days. You know what I'm saying? In other words, everything's very calculated, but at the same time, it's just a feeling, it's forever. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, it has been said that one should accept happiness and distress. Everything that falls into a salt mine becomes salty. Thus, everything that falls into samsara becomes samsara. One should not make distinctions of happiness and suffering at all. As long as person who has fallen into a bottomless river does not reach the shore, he cannot attain real happiness. Thus curse and blessings are all suffering as long as we are in this world. So it's only attaining the shore. So it doesn't matter how much the bottom is, we don't have to find the bottom to get to the shore. You just have to go to the shore. Right, so we don't need to know, well, how much did they, you know, how much Maya were they in? That's not important. I guess it was saying before, 60s, 70s, someone had some problems, Maya. No one wanted to hear the details. You know, it was just generic enough. You know the line. You know, oh, they got into this aspect or that aspect. You don't need to know the details because you know how far, But then we saw from 80, no, everyone's got to know the details so that they can make a proper judgment of exactly how bad it is. When it was just, it's just gramikata, right? It's just gossip, right? Because then the result is, the other one is, okay, you got into Maya. What's the solution? Be in the association of devotees, be Krishna conscious. Then when we know the detail, then we're so tainted, then we can't just let them do devotional service, right? Because devotional service is based on karma, right? Right? How good a person you are, then you can do devotional service. And if you do anything wrong, you actually can't do devotional service. Isn't that the philosophy? Yeah, so therefore then, they would not allow, oh, but he's done this, and on 20 years later, oh, but he, I saw one meeting. They brought up, okay, we have this project, and we think that this should be done, it's a good thing. Everyone thought it's great. Then okay, who's going to do this? Okay, this person's going to do it. We feel he's the best. Someone brought up, no, but 20 years ago when he was temple president, he did this to one person. You know. So then the point is in 20 years, devotional service has no effect? No, because karma is the supreme. Right? And it's not even karma as defined by Shastra, because we don't want to do that. That's archaic. It's karma how we define it ourselves as a group. Our feelings, that's the thing. Understand? So Chitraketu is trying to take us beyond this mundane perspective, into what is reality. Right? Devotional service is what's beyond. So as soon as you step out, then it's gone. Reactions may be there, but you don't have to worry about that. The modes of nature will take care of all that. Okay. Even if it's not raining. If it was raining, then there was so much water coming. So that's the whole point, is all these things don't matter. So for the devotee, it really doesn't matter. So even if people want to think like this, and because of this, then there's so much trouble, for the devotee as an individual, it's not a problem. The problem is it's not devotional service, the whole methodology. Right? Does that make sense? So, yes. And even when I say, no, we're trying to do for Krishna, yes, but we're using inferior tools. That's the point. Why would we use passion and ignorance as tools in devotional service and say that they're superior, more important than tools in the mode of goodness? Right? That's a problem. If we don't know any better and we're using that, that's fine. But to reject what's recommended and then make up our own religions, that's not of any value. Like that. Everybody's doing that. You know what I'm saying? That's just, everybody does that. You know, so you have okay, let us say we have a bunch of suits and they're at a power lunch and they are discussing, you know, some, you know, different kind of business thing. And it's a very, you know, high tension thing. Right? Now in the Vedic system, you wouldn't have a lunch like that. You know, you have lunch, nice, then sit, or better is you sit, work it all out, then have lunch. You don't do that. But for them, that's the thing, power lunch. That's the way to do it, because if the senses are going on, one, you know, it just makes a nice atmosphere, and then, you know, in that, you can probably get more work done. Right? So that's a religion. Now, when these 50, 60-year-old guys, someone says something they don't like, then how do they express it? Because you don't stand up, yell and scream and all that. That's not them. They don't do stuff like that. Right? They take their napkin and throw it on the table. Right? No? Yeah. You know, then you know, oh, wow, we've overstepped the boundary here. He threw his napkin. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is it's they make their own religion. That's the whole point. So it's people, you make up your own thing. We don't even know it because we don't understand the definition of religion. That's why we saw before, it was discussing that we're not interested in all these lower kind of aspects of religion. That means the nature of something without its connection to Krishna. We're not interested. Connected to Krishna, you know, according to the recommended path, actual connected, that's what we're interested in. So Bhagavatam shows us if it's what is connectable and what's not, what is actual connected and what's not. Right? So at this point, then Chitraketu is pointing out is that what's happening now, this is happening by, you know, the arrangement of the material energy, so therefore neither her, what she's doing or what he's doing or what she's doing is actually anybody's to blame. Right? He did nothing wrong, you know, and she is, you know, by what he's saying, and she did nothing wrong by what she's said. Right? So his insult, her curse, neither have done anything wrong because the soul is transcendental. Right? So then and there, it's not trying to get out of something, it's accepting. So the reaction is going to come by the arrangement, and so then that's there. And to say it's a curse, to say it's a blessing, what does it matter? Right? Like Narad Muni, he was cursed, he took it as a blessing. Mm-hmm. You know? Because now he can just travel and preach and all this, so he doesn't have to get stuck at, you know, things for so many days. Right, he doesn't actually have to go to Daksha's yajna, because that'll take, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks, because he can only be there 3 days anyway. You know, right? So it's a blessing. That's his point. We call it a curse, but maybe it's how can you say it's actually a curse? Because we see much of the time that what we say is adversity then turns out to be a blessing. Maharaj Prakrit. You know, he's cursed. But he sees it as, you know, as an opportunity to sit down and read Bhagavatam literally 24/7. Mm-hmm. Right? And so by doing that, then he comes to the perfectional platform and he goes back to Godhead. Right? Yes, they were cursed. They saw Krishna directly. Mm-hmm. You know, those apsaras who became crocodiles. Then they saw Arjuna. You know, the pure devotee. So that's the thing. In the past, things were done so there was actual benefit. Okay. So it appears as one, but there's the other. So in other words, something's only a blessing when it's connected to the Lord. And if it's not connected to the Lord, it's not actually a blessing. Because he gets stuff and it goes away. Is that King Chitraketu continued. This is so wonderful, right? King. Chitraketu. Continued. Yes. Yes, that would be the thing. You know, how you say, or King Chitraketu continued, right, you know. Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. Unaffected by the conditions in the material world, he creates all the conditioned souls by his own personal potency. Right? So he's one, therefore he's unaffected. Because he does all these different things, he is Brahman, he is Paramatma, he is Bhagavan. So he's unaffected by these things. It's not that there's this and that, because you can be affected by something else. But he's one, so he's unaffected, right? We're affected. Someone else comes up and gets into our, you know, say in our face, right? I was about to say in our grill, right? Right? And so then the whole thing is then what is, we get affected. You know, but do we get affected? You know, in the morning we come and it's like, ugh, you look terrible today, you know, like that, you know. Huh? No, because that's the body. Because you're looking at that I'm the body, and so the body is not the way I want it, and so therefore. But I'm saying when we're not looking at it that, we're looking at it, you know, do you understand me? You know, the example I'm giving? Okay, so that one,
harder to relate.
Harder to relate. Okay. Okay, so I guess the man thinks he looks fine, but he can make it better, and then woman is thinking, you know, how to bring it up to the standard. Okay. Interesting. Yes. It's a serious bad hair day, then it's a serious, okay. Okay. So he's one, he is his body. So where's the problem? You know? Does that make sense? We're not the body, so therefore we're affected by other things. Everything is Krishna. He's never affected by anything. Because it's him. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that because he's one, he's unaffected. So he creates all the situations for the living entities, all their results, all their activities, all their reactions. But he's unaffected because it's all just him. Right? You can't function outside of him. Yes. That's, it means it's a feeling, but the point, yes, that's there, but that's relationship. But the point is all this material stuff doesn't bother because it's just his inferior energy. You know, like you go out in the back and turn the compost over. You know, it's not that then for days, you know, you have a traumatic experience or stuff. You know, you sit in your armchair looking like a zombie. You know, what happened? Oh, I turned the compost. You know, don't bring it up. You know? You know, it's inferior energy. You go through the garage, you know, try to clean it up. It's the inferior energy. You know, it doesn't bother you. It's all your energy. So, because of being contaminated by the material energy, the living entity is put into ignorance, and thus into different conditions of bondage. Sometimes by knowledge, the living entity is given liberation. In Sattva-guna and Rajaguna, he is subjected to happiness and distress. Right? So in ignorance, it's only distress. So Sattva-guna, more happiness, less distress. Rajaguna, it'll be, you know, nicely balanced, so that means generally more distress. And then there'll be, you know, ignorance will be just distress. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally disposed towards all living entities. Therefore, no one is very dear to him, and no one is a great enemy for him. No one is his friend, and no one is his relative. Being unattached to the material world. So, on the material platform, Krishna has nothing to relate to here. So, therefore, no one's this or that. It's just where you fit according to your karma. You're behaving good, you get the good results. You're behaving bad, you get the bad results. It doesn't matter to him. Right? He's unaffected. But the point in the material world is to develop that love for him. So therefore, he's always watching for the opportunities when the living entity can be brought into Krishna consciousness. That's a whole different discussion. Right? But here he's just discussing, he's done something, she's done something, and so is this actually a curse or a blessing or what? Does that make sense? Yeah? He has no affection for so-called happiness or hatred for so-called distress. The two terms, happiness and distress, are relative. Since the Lord is always happy, for him there is no question of distress. Although this, you know, so it's relative here because one person says it's happiness, the other person will say that's distress. Like that. But for the Lord, he's always happy, so there is no question of distress. So there isn't. Yeah. Although the Supreme Lord is unattached to our happiness and distress according to karma, and although no one is his enemy or favorite, he creates pious and impious activities through the agency of his material potency. Right? So everything's equal, but he creates what's pious and what's impious. So you do follow what's, you know, recommended, it's called pious. You don't go with that, it's called impious. Right? Does that make sense? And the only reason one would be considered better is because of its connection with the laws given by the Lord. Though ultimately those laws are meant for devotional service. So if one's following the laws without devotional service, then what's the point? Right? It's nice. Then it's just today it's nice, tomorrow it won't be nice. Right? Okay. Thus, for the continuation of the materialistic way of life, he creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death. Srila Prabhupada comments. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate doer of everything, in his original transcendental existence, he is not responsible for the happiness and distress, or bondage and liberation of the conditioned souls. These are due to the results of fruit of activities of the living entities within the material world. Lilies open or close because of the sunshine, and thus the bumblebees enjoy or suffer. But the sunshine and the sun globe are not responsible for the happiness and distress of the bumblebees. Does that make sense? So the bumblebees, if it's open, they're happy. If it's closed, they're not happy. So this opening and closing is happening because of the sun. But the sun's not responsible for the happiness and distress of the bumblebee. Right? The bumblebees decided that, you know, if it's open, yeah, they're happy, and if it's closed, they're distressed. Yes.
Can I say that this is not the example of A equals B equals B?
No, because the point is why is the bee there?
Because of the pollen.
Yes, but it's its own desire.
And it was created like that. And this.
Yes, but why did the living entity choose to be a bumblebee?
I find it hard to answer.
Yes, you know what I'm saying? So out of desire, they become a bumblebee. So therefore, you can choose whatever you want. You know, it's just like, let's say, the cook cooks all kinds of a wide variety of foodstuffs, right? And then it's all very good quality and everything's like that. And everybody's eating according to their choice. But someone, by eating according to their choice, gets sick because they're not actually supposed to eat that or not so much of it. Is that the cook's fault? Yes, that's the problem. The modern is, the modern is, I'm never wrong, someone else is wrong. Well, the Vedic is, no, there's standards, therefore he can be wrong. That was Socrates' problem. He said there's a standard. The sophists didn't like that because that means then they could be wrong. Well, the sophist idea is if we all agree this is right, we're right. Right? But he's saying, no, there's an absolute truth, and so therefore what you're doing is wrong. So that's the basis of modern philosophy. So in other words, they had it. It wasn't that developed. Socrates opposed it. Plato kind of tried to bring out the positive points of Socrates, but also make it so he's not going to end up, you know, with special drinks himself. Aristotle then was able to analyze what the sophists are saying and then say it in a very, very articulate way that now he's, quote-unquote, the father of, you know, modern philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. If you say it's just whatever everybody thinks, so then everybody will work in such a way using the political influence to get everybody to think the same, and then you're right. And then, so what has that got to do with the truth? Right? So in other words, when people say, we want to know the truth, means I want to know what are the facts according to the interpretation I give those facts. They don't actually want to know the truth. Truth is Krishna. So that's the problem with the modern. Modern is based on ignorance. It's based on falsity. It's not based at anywhere on actual truth. So, yeah. Okay. Chitraketu continued, "O mother, you are now unnecessarily angry. But since all my happiness and distress are destined by my past activities, I do not plead to be excused or relieved from your curse. Although what I have said is not wrong, please let whatever you think is wrong be pardoned." You know, so he doesn't want to be relieved from the curse, he just wants to, you know, so that she's peaceful and all that, and their relationship is proper. Srila Prabhupada comments, "Being fully aware of how the results of one's karma accrue by the laws of nature, Chitraketu did not want to be released from Parvati's curse. Nonetheless, he wanted to satisfy her because although his verdict was natural, she was displeased with him. As a matter of course, Maharaj Chitraketu begged pardon from Parvati." Right? Because relationship, you're supposed to deal nicely, so therefore you want to work it out. Not that he was wrong, but it's that in the relationship it's there. Does that make sense? That's the important aspect. Like, let's say we're talking about something. Okay, the lady's in the kitchen, she was making something, she was going fast, you know, she put it into the mug or something, she dropped it. Right? And now she's upset. Right? So the man comes in, you know, is going to fix it all. And so he says, oh, but it, you know, make sure you dry your hands before you pick that up because it's slippery and therefore if you do that, then it won't fall. Right? So, is the guy wrong? Technically, mechanically.
Yes.
Huh? Huh? Did you say yes or niet?
Yes.
Yes. No. We're not talking about the ultimate sense. We're talking about it in the mechanical sense. Okay. Okay. So, mechanically, yes. If your hands aren't wet and slippery and all that, then it won't slip. But is that the situation? The actual situation is she's trying to do something that didn't work out. She feels distressed because it didn't work out. So what's the solution? Oh, okay, help clean it up, help make get it happen so it does happen. You understand? So that's what he's saying, is that technically he's not wrong. But by interaction, then she's got upset, he's trying to correct that. But he's not trying to deal with the curse. Does that make sense? So this is what's important in the relationship. Because nowadays, no, but what's wrong? What did I do wrong? It says mechanically nothing, but as far as relationship and how you actually function, that's wrong. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King Pariket, subduer of the enemy, after Chitraketu satisfied Lord Shiva and his wife Parvati, he boarded his airplane and left, as they looked on. When Lord Shiva and Parvati saw that Chitraketu, although informed of the curse, was unafraid, they smiled, being fully astonished by his behavior. Therefore, in the presence of the great sage Narada, the demons, the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, and his personal associates, Lord Shiva, who is the most powerful, spoke to his wife Parvati, while they all listened. So Narad Muni was there. All these others are there. Narad was there. So when it says the sages, so, you know, so it was a great assembly like that. You know, so that's why she made the point, if Narad's not saying anything, why are you saying something? You know. Verses 27 to 41. Lord Shiva glorifies the Vaishnavas and Chitraketu becomes Ritrasura. Lord Shiva said, My dear beautiful Parvati, have you seen the greatness of the Vaishnavas? Being servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, they are great souls and are not interested in any kind of material happiness. 27. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, O woman with beautiful hips, you excel in beauty but not in bhakti, jnana, and vairagya. In this way he jokes suggestively. The Lord performs astonishing acts. I have seen this astonishing act of the Lord just now. He has caused you to be offended and to utter a curse. He has shown the greatness of his devotee whose prema did not decrease at all by showing the devotee's power to remain indifferent when cursed by Parvati. Because you expect that this goes, then they'll be very morose, it'll affect their devotional service, but he's not at all affected. Comes on, okay. You know, there's something, you know, just more to give up. The word Mahatmanam of great devotees has significance. If the curse you uttered in anger cannot give the slightest unhappiness to him, then that curse is powerless. Right? Because the curse is supposed to, you give a curse to actually for punishing someone, but this is not going to punish him at all. It's just, he's just going to remember the Lord. So externally it looks like he's cursed, but it doesn't actually matter. So it had that no power. Now she is the material energy. So that means the material energy has no control over devotees. Doesn't mean that the environment they're in doesn't change and all that, but it doesn't affect the soul. That's the It has become useless. You should not treat the great devotees having prema bhakti like this from this day on. This lesson is hinted. Lord Shiva continued. Right, so he hints, right? You know, that's the method. Lord Shiva continued. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. 29. Srila Prabhupada, footnote 29. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamritsimala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukulya Vichara, which is in the Abhideya section in the Thakur's book. Right? So, in other words, this is how the devotee practices devotional service. He's doing it without any interest in whether the condition is nice or not, whether the results of the activity will get him something nice or not. He's just doing it because it will please the Supreme Lord. How do we know it will please the Supreme Lord? Because that's what Shastra recommends, right? This is the importance of what we're talking about, the mode of goodness and the duties that Prabhupada was talking about before, right? That's mentioned by Chitraketu. Because why do I do things, right? From the conditioned point of view, why do I do something? Right? Because I want the benefit. That's why I do anything. Right? So whether it's a positive or a negative, I do this because I'll get the positive, or I do this because I won't get a negative. But the point is, I'm trying to create an ideal situation for myself. That's the total reason I do anything. Right? Even in the material sense, even we following duty, right? It's because of the benefit I'll get from dutifulness. Either people recognize, oh yes, he's very dutiful, he's true to his word, or he just has seen that the effect of that works better than not doing, being dutiful. You understand? So ultimately it's about oneself. Right? So now, so then if I'm going to give up doing things for myself, what am I going to do? Right? So, what is the Gyanis, solution?
Nothing.
Do nothing. But is that bhakti? No. So doing something for yourself and doing nothing for yourself, right? Both aren't bhakti. So you have to do something for Krishna. You know, it's not for ourselves, it's for Krishna. How do we define that? Because we don't know. We only know how to do stuff for ourselves. That's why there's Shastra. Shastra then defines what it is you should be doing to please Krishna. Because if we reject Shastra, how are we going to know? Because all we're left with is what we do ourselves due to our condition. So that's the whole thing. These things are separate. The consciousness of doing things for Krishna, and then what form I'll use. Like the best informed will be to do things according to what Shastra recommends. Because the other one is speculative. Why that? Who came up with it? You know? And if you go back then, you know, somebody in the, you know, media field can say, yes, back in, you know, 1967, you know, at, you know, in this month, at this, on this show, then this person brought up this word and used that example. And so that's where it stuck. You understand? So it's all speculation. Somebody used it, the modes of nature, you know, by the modes, the other by being the modes that resonated with it, and so yes, then it became a thing. Is that what you said? So that's the whole point, is that we don't know. So that's why Shastra says, this is what you should do. That's why we study Shastra. That's why we learn what it is. That's why we see the example of how people did. Because we take it, okay, he's wrong, therefore he cursed, and he has to behave in self-humble. But if he's not wrong, why does he have to accept the curse, and why does he have to behave humble? Shastra defines these things. Otherwise, we don't know what's relationship. We don't know what's actually being selfless and all that. You know, we don't know what is bhakti. This is why we do things. That's why we use Shastra. Additionally, in his Paramatma Sandarbha, Anucheda 93, paragraph 77, Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse when he writes, quote, devotional service, which is manifest from the Supreme Lord's internal potency, eclipses everything else and makes it unimportant, and makes it unimportant by comparison. Right? So anything else in comparison to bhakti is unimportant, right? When it's done just to please the Supreme Lord, right? In his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 21, he writes, liberation is also eclipsed by attachment to the Lord, an attachment that frees one from the material pleasures and sufferings destined by one's past karma. Because what you'll call enjoyment and suffering is going to be from your past karma. That's all. It's not going to be something else. So Srila Prabhupada comments, Parvati might naturally have inquired how devotees become so exalted. Therefore, this verse explains that they are Narayana para, simply dependent on Narayana. They do not mind reverses in life because in the service of Narayana, they have learned to tolerate whatever hardships there may be. They do not care whether they are in heaven or in hell. They simply engage in the service of the Lord. This is their excellence. Lord Shiva continued. Because of the actions of the Supreme Lord's external energy, the living entities are conditioned in contact with material bodies. The dualities of happiness and distress, birth and death, curses and favors are natural byproducts of this contact in the material world. As one mistakenly considers a flower garland to be a snake or experiences happiness and distress in a dream, so in the material world, by lack of careful consideration, we differentiate between happiness and distress, considering one good and the other bad. Persons engaged in devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, Krishna, have naturally perfect knowledge and detachment from the material world. Right? So this perfect knowledge and detachment go together. Therefore, such devotees are not interested in the so-called happiness or so-called distress of this world. 29-31. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Attaining realization of the unreality of objects seen in duality by practice of jnana is difficult for the jnani. The devotees, however, do not seek jnana and vairagya by practice of jnana because bhakti itself produces jnana and vairagya. The devotees have no other shelter in this world. Nothing attracts them. By pursuing only bhakti, they do not make distinctions of good or bad material objects. Please understand the nature of devotees, right? So something's good because of its usefulness in Krishna service, and something's bad because of its lack of usefulness in Krishna service. So it's not based on what is the material concept of the thing. If it be useful, we use it. If it's not useful, it's not. Does that make sense? That's the determination. That defines what's pious and what's impious. It's a whole different level of thinking. Right? Does that make sense? So this idea, the Sarva Dharma Parityaja, we see that this is now becoming a very prominent element. Before this, it was about karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, you know, all the technicalities, mechanics of all these different things. Right? But now what we're seeing is that this aspect of, no, it's just about the Lord. It pleases the Lord. That's the point. That's what we have to, you know, start. We want to start thinking like this. We want to start valuing this. You know, because when something you value, you can get to it. You don't value it, you don't get to it. Does that make sense? Right. So the jnanis, they have difficulty understanding this by their path. But for the devotee, it's very easy. But they don't use the path of jnan. They use bhakti. It has the same elements in it. It's called jnan because it lacks bhakti. Knowledge being used in Krishna's service, that's called bhakti. So automatically, but the jnan, the results they want is detachment. But for the devotee, they're not looking for detachment. They're looking for attachment to Krishna. Detachment just comes naturally. Right? So, please understand the nature of devotees. Neither I, Lord Shiva, nor Brahma, nor the Ashwini Kumaras, nor Narada, or the other great sages who are Brahma's sons, nor even the demigods can understand the pastimes and personality of the Supreme Lord. Right? It's interesting that we see, at least in this canto, and I think this canto may be something from last canto, that the Ashwini Kumaras are always mentioned as these great personalities. Because as far as Indra's concerned, they're kind of like low-level demigods. Right? But why are they mentioned? Yes, because they learn transcendental knowledge. So they're actually on a different platform than the other demigods. You know, like Shiva, Narada, they're all, you know, counted within these that category. But they're you know, we see they you know, as many other things. Ashwini Kumaras, Narada, then other sages, Brahma's sons, even the demigods, you know, so they're brought out of demigods. So when we say demigods, then we know it means Indra, Varuna, Vayu, like this. Okay. None of them can understand the pastimes and personality of the Supreme Lord. Although we are part of the Supreme Lord, we consider ourselves independent. separate controllers, and thus we cannot understand his identity. He holds no one as very dear and no one as inimical. He has no one for his own relative, and no one is alien to him. He is actually the soul of the soul of all living entities. Thus he is the auspicious friend of all living beings and is very near and dear to all of them. This magnanimous Chitraketu is a dear devotee of the Lord. He is equal to all living entities and is free from attachment and hatred. Similarly, I am also very dear to Lord Narayana. Therefore, no one should be astonished to see the activities of the most exalted devotees of Narayana, for they are free from attachment and envy. They are always peaceful and they are equal to everyone. So now he's put himself and Chitraketu basically on that same platform of Narayana Parayana. So he's pointing out these pastimes between us, you know, are on another level. People cannot understand them. Srila Prabhupada comments, here is a difference between male and female that exists even in the higher statuses of life. Of life, in fact. Even between Lord Shiva and his wife. Lord Shiva could understand Chitraketu very nicely, but Parvati could not. Thus, even in the higher statuses of life, there's still a difference between the understanding of a male and that of a female. So if we noticed in the wording that she used and everything like that, it was very, very specifically female. Like that, because she is the, how you say, the you could say, the leading female in the, you know, the Mahatattva, you know, like that.
Primeval.
The primeval, right? You know, so it's just so exact. Every word, it wasn't like it was partially, there was very, very, just the flavor of it was so feminine, you know. It may be clearly said that the understanding of a woman is always inferior to the understanding of a man, right? Because we're talking about understanding here, so the technical points. We're not talking about the rasa aspect, right? Because we see as now, within the material world, the masculine would be considered the superior intellect, right? But when you get into the spiritual world, then where is the superior intellect? It's with the female, right? The top two rasas are led by the females. Right? And then the middle could be both ways, though the boys are more prominent, servants are more prominent than men. And then when you think of the Santa Ras, you generally think of masculine nature. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, it will analyze the situation. But the feminine nature is that everything will be nice here. It will be good here. Everything will work out. So if that's in the spiritual world, that's the topmost transcendental position. You're not just analyzing that, but it's tasting the relationships, the rasa, the feelings, the experience. But when that's applied within the material, then that's what keeps us here. Because we think we can work out, it could be nice, it could be good. Yes?
Can we say that it's inferior because ladies usually cannot separate between the intellect and the emotions?
Yes, that's the whole point. That's why then, it's not that the women aren't intelligent. Technically speaking, women are more intelligent than men. But the application of it, they don't separate their intelligence from the mind. Therefore, they only use the intelligence to get the desires of the mind. Like that. Does that make sense? But technically speaking, women are more intelligent than men. But because intelligence is meant to understand the difference between matter and spirit, that's why we'll say women are less intelligent. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So, because everything is about relationship, women are more intelligent, like we were discussing before. Guy's done something wrong, and so therefore, you know, he's saying, you know, you're not going to talk to them again. It's exactly calculated to the nanosecond. When the guy's proper mood has come up to what you're expecting, you know, in that particular situation, then the mood changes immediately. It's never more or less than what exactly accomplishes the work. Now, is that more intelligent or less intelligent than the men when it comes to that? Way more intelligent. The men can't figure it out at all. All the women know what's going on. None of the men can figure out what's going on. Right? Does that make sense? So, but the point is the sense that's not separated. Because in the spiritual world, in Krishna's pleasure, what's being used there, the techniques, everything, it's all one thing. So therefore it comes out so nice. So there's no mugdhata and sarvagya. The only work within just pleasing Krishna. But Krishna can be in either one of them. Right? So as far as tattva goes, then yes, there'll be a superiority of the men. But as far as rasa goes, then there'll be superiority in the women. Does that make sense? Yes. Or ego, basically. Yes. Ignorance, then every language of the world has a word for when women behave like that. And the women themselves will use it. There's nothing you can do about it. You try your best. Now the point comes down to, is it your duty to try to please this woman? Right? Since she is Parvati, you know, she's the mother of everyone in the universe, so basically everybody does have responsibility to do. So therefore he put in the endeavor until she was peaceful. And then he left. Because he was just flying by, he was just making a comment, he would have kept flying by, you know, it's just like, hey, wow, hey, check it out, you know, that kind of thing. But because it came out late, then he came down to work out the relationship. And then he got back on his plane and then continued. Like that. But that's the problem in the modern, is women will deal like that with somebody in a relationship that doesn't exist, and they expect you to respond when you don't have any duty like that. You know what I'm saying? I remember we were talking with one parents about something about the kid, and because I was pointing out what is the system, how it works and all that, and they were just trying to do some sentimental thing. They were going to do something that thought it would be really nice if the kid came along and all that, though it wasn't the time, it wasn't the this, it wasn't the that, you know, it just wasn't right. And so then the woman, then the mother, then she pulled the emotional trip that she could pull on her husband. You know, just the whole emotional freak out. And I just told her, says, you don't have any right to do that with me. You do that with your husband, but you know, what is my connection? Then she freaked out more, but she couldn't do anything because, you know, it's correct. You understand? So that's a matter of training. In other words, with training, one knows, the woman knows where to apply these elements of rasa, where not. Since they're, one, technically the highest principle that you're working with. So in the spiritual platform, the rasa is higher than the tattva. In the material world, as far as the experience of the material world, rasa is higher than tattva. If you want to get out of the material world, tattva is higher than rasa. Right? Does that make sense? So, but on the material platform, to make it work socially and all these different things, then the rasa is higher. Therefore, the feminine, but they have to know where it applies. That's the point of duty. Because if the men or women don't follow their duty, their rasa doesn't work properly. Like here, in rasa, that was Chitraketu's duty. He did it. It works out nicely. Right? And then because of that, then she also learns. But if he didn't do that, she'd be grumpy. She wouldn't be able to say anything. You know what I'm saying? So one has to know where these things apply, where it's superior, where it's inferior. So the inferior, like Prabhupada's pointing out, is that it may be clearly said. He's not saying sometimes. It's clearly stated that the understanding of a woman is always inferior to the understanding of man, because she'll always see it in rasa. And so therefore, if she's on the material platform, then she can't see it by that higher view. Does that make sense? If she's seeing it according to the spiritual, then it works very nicely. So that's the idea, is that when you're dealing, then the woman has her, you know, mind, her intelligence, and the man then can function just in the capacity of intelligence. So you add that extra intelligence to the intelligence that the woman is using at the time, and then the intelligence outweighs the mind. Therefore, then you can move on and do what's correct if something's misapplied. So that's what's happening here. Yes.
I would say that it also differs on the level of varna. Like higher varnas and ladies, they will be more intelligent.
Of course, way more. So it means that a Brahmin woman will be more intelligent than a Shudra man.
And then, for safe ground for her, it would be better always to keep the level of interaction or whatever on the platform or in the vessel? Is it possible?
No. It means, in other words, it's all going to be about rasa, but you understand the influence of tattva and therefore what's proper. So in the mode of goodness, you understand, because the tattva is like this, therefore this should be done. But it's all about what you're going to do. You know, it's just, does that make sense? Yeah, like that. Yes. Yes, of course. Yes. That's why Chitraketu came and worked it out. The point is it's like this. Okay, even we go back to yesterday's conversation of Chitraketu in the airplane with a whole gaggle of Vidyadhar women. Right? Now, here it is you have highly qualified women, right? These Vidyadhara women, they're not, you know, something down, you know, around the corner, you understand? So, now, why would they be comfortable? They said they were enjoying themselves. Does a woman enjoy herself in an environment unless she feels that it's of value? Okay, so now Chitraketu was being a bit of a bore, then, you know, either that what he was saying was boring or he was acting like one of those, you know, the guy, the animals with tusks and bristles on their back. Either way, you know. Then the point is would they all be having a good time? So that means, you know, one guy has enough trouble with one lady, let alone one guy with a whole airplane full of ladies. So what does that mean? It means he knows how to deal with women. That's another thing, but then it would be saying, then it would be saying that, because these are sages talking, And even though Chitraketu really, women really didn't like him, but because they happened to be in the airplane when he happened to walk in and took off, then they were stuck there. So, they tried to make the best out of it, though it was really difficult for them. You understand? So Chitraketu knew how to deal with women. So therefore, as soon as Parvati is upset, then he goes and deals. So it doesn't matter, women are women. It doesn't matter what the relationship is. Right? The nature is the same. The whole how the things unfold are the same. But the detail of it, the flavor and all that will be very unique from moment to moment, because there'll never be a reaction the same. That's another thing. But what we're meaning is that the son having to deal with the mother, brother dealing with sister, father dealing with daughter, husband with wife, it's going to be the same principle, the same nature. It's just the flavor of it. That will be the difference. Does that make sense? It means if she can correct it. In other words, the point is where... Where's the possession? Right? In other words, based on the relationship, what's the sense of possession? Because if there's no relationship, then there's nothing to do. Then she'll have to get the husband to work it out. Isn't that what husbands are for? Right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have a governance and they have the spokesperson. Right? So that's the husband, right, in this case. Right? Well. Sorry? Yes, it takes time. The domestication process is quite lengthy. Okay. Okay. In the Western countries, there is now agitation to the effect that man and woman should be considered equal. But from this verse, it appears that woman is less intelligent than man. It is clear that Chitraketu wanted to criticize the behavior of his friend, Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva was sitting with his wife on his lap. Then, too, Lord Shiva wanted to criticize Chitraketu for externally posing as a great devotee, but being interested in enjoying with the Vidyadhari women. These were all friendly jokes. there was nothing serious for which Chitraketu should have been cursed by Parvati, right? Because we see it's just like with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his father, right? They're both Nitya Siddhas, right? They both come down as acharyas in the line. They're both, in their time, the president of the Vishva Vaishnav Raja Sabha, right? The leading devotee in the, you know, mission of Lord Chaitanya, as given by Rupa Goswami. But in their friendly talks with each other, sometimes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would call Bhaktivinoda Thakur Vishayi, right? Means, you know, sense enjoyer, because, you know, he's got the family and 12 kids and the whole, you know, the big job and the big position and all that. He was just showing how, doesn't matter what, you can use everything in Krishna's service. So he was showing that. Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was just showing, you know, how to be the sadhu. So they're both showing very valuable lessons, you know, how to be a brahmachari and sannyasi and in the mission, and how to be a grihastha and vanaprastha in the mission. And we see at the end of Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur showed how to be a paramahamsa. So it wasn't there too. But as joking, they would say this. So that was the same position between Chitraketu and Shiva. They're friends, so therefore, because they're both Vaishnavas, they're Narayana Para. Right, so therefore, you know, what's not to be friendly about it, right? So they would just say, hey, you're sitting there with your wife, and this guy said, yeah, but you're sitting there with all these Vidyadhari women, you know? You know, so each one is a unique situation. But because they're transcendental, they won't see anything outside of service to Krishna. So for them, it won't be a problem. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Is then here it says agitation that women and women should be considered equal, but they're never equal. Right? It's either above or below, like that. Because technically, the women don't consider the men equal. Right? When it comes to relationships and stuff, men don't understand it, so they're considered junior. Like that. So where's this equal? You know what I'm saying? Women don't consider men equal. They just want the equal opportunity to apply making the men into a junior position outside the home. Right? In the home, he's the servant. So in the business world, then they also the servant. So there's no question of ever equal. That's not the thing. This is a political move that it sounds great. This is technically what you call newspeak. Right? It sounds like wonderful, but it's, you know, we're not talking 50-50 here. We're talking 90-10. You know, because that's what it is at home, right? So all it is from there. Then they just want to make it 90-10 everywhere, and then that will be called equal. Yes, the point is, yeah, just, I mean, someone pointed out the other day is, hey, but women need 10, you know, 9 times more than the men, so therefore, them getting 90 and them getting 10 is equal. Yeah, they should be happy that they got the 10, you know. Happy that you let them enjoy it, right? You know, you can have it, but you're not going to enjoy it. Okay. Upon hearing the instructions of Lord Shiva, Parvati must have been very much ashamed for cursing Chitraketu to become a demon. Mother Parvati could not appreciate Chitraketu's position, and therefore she cursed him. But when she understood the instructions of Lord Shiva, she was ashamed, right? Because it's all about rasa, so that's what was going on there. She's having a relationship with her husband that's there, everybody is accepting it. He comes along, makes a point about it, she becomes offended, right? But it is at the same time, it's the comments made about her husband, so you don't mess with the husband, because then that messes with her, right? And so, therefore, she's seeing it from that view, but she wasn't seeing that it was just the Vaishnavas themselves, because he said nothing, the sages said nothing, so in other words, they were understanding it. So just she didn't catch it there. Right. Okay. Does that make sense? So she was looking at it for rasa. She said, hey, all the sages aren't saying anything, why are you saying something? But she was looking at it for rasa. He was looking at it from the tattva aspect. So that's the point what wasn't caught. Yes. That's why Shastra's there. Then you go by, this is what Shastra says, so you do that, even though it doesn't appear that that's what you want to do. Yes, of course. So then the point is that's why in the Vedic system, then there's always connect, the woman's always connected generally to some man. Like that. Does that make sense? If nothing else, at least to Krishna, right? You know, because you don't get a better man than that, so it's not a bad deal. But because he is a living entity within the universe. Lord Shiva and Parvati are actually the head of living entities in the universe. You know what I'm saying? Brahma is the creator, so on that plate. But as far as they're being living entities, they're being the masculine and feminine, and they're having that interaction, that's with Shiva and Parvati. So in that way, they're the top. So everyone's their junior. So she was dealing as if, you know, a son is misbehaving in the etiquettes. But she wasn't... So that's within the laws, within the material world, she was right. But because he was actually dealing on the transcendental platform with Shiva and his transcendental platform, that she didn't catch.
Yeah. That comes out in the later purport. Here, Prabhupada says she was wrong to get upset. Later, he says she was right to get upset in order to set example for future.
Yes.
Learn how to avoid.
Yes. 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 So. Okay.
Okay.
Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, after hearing this speech by your husband, the demigoddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, gave up her astonishment at the behavior of King Chitraketu and became steady in intelligence. Footnote 30. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Shantadhi, peaceful intelligence, indicates that, remembering her previous mood, she became ashamed and covered her face with her cloth. Now, if there was no cloth, you can't cover your face.
Covering your head.
Huh?
Yes,
yes. The great devotee Chitraketu was so powerful that he was quite competent to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation because she's just the material energy. He's actually now under the protection of the internal potency. So actually, he's actually more powerful. The jiva is more powerful than material energy, but because of his attachment identification with it, therefore he comes subject to the control of the material energy. Does that make sense? But instead of doing so, he very humbly accepted the curse and bowed his head before Lord Shiva and Parvati, and Lord Shiva and his wife, right? Because of the relationship like that. This is very much to be appreciated as the standard behavior of a Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada comments. Chitraketu very sportingly felt that since the mother wanted to curse him, he could accept this curse just to please her. This is called Sadhu Lakshana, the characteristic of... There's a footnote. There is, oh yes, there's a footnote, 31. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 37 to Bhagavad Arkamichimala chapter 15 called, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukulya Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. It's interesting, because before we go miss a footnote, who cares? But now that footnote, you have to write something on that footnote. So I said, wait a minute. Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. So here is that even though they may have the potency, they may have the power, the position, authority, but in relationship, then one doesn't use that. That's the Vaishnava position because he's not worried about the material benefits or loss. He's only worried about pleasing Krishna. So relationships, you know, dealing with people, nice, that pleases Krishna. So. Okay. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarodapi Sahishnuna, a devotee should always be very humble and meek and should offer all respects to others, especially to superiors. Being protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee is always powerful. But a devotee does not wish to show his power unnecessarily. However, when a less intelligent person has some power, he wants to use it for sense gratification. This is not the behavior of a devotee. So one doesn't use the power one has. It's only if it's for service to Krishna, but here it wasn't. How would it be service to Krishna? Right? So therefore, Shiva and Parvati are very dear to the Lord. They're great devotees. They're Vaishnava and Vaishnavi, right? So therefore, then he's going to deal with them very properly. So that's the etiquette. Okay. So that's why he says this is very much appreciated as the standard behavior of Vaishnavas. So Sukadeva said this is appreciated, this is standard. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Being cursed by Mother Durga, Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva, that same Chittaketu accepted birth in a demoniac species of life, although still fully equipped with transcendental knowledge and practical application of that knowledge in life, you know, means in devotional service. He appeared as a demon at the fire sacrifice performed by Tvashta, and thus he became famous as Vritrasura. My dear King Parikit, you inquired from me how Vritrasura, a great devotee, took birth in a demoniac family. Thus I have tried to explain to you everything about this. Chittaketu is a great devotee, Mahatma. If one hears this history of Chittaketu from a pure devotee, the listener also is freed from the conditional life of material existence. 32. Srila Prabhupada emphasized the importance of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from an authorized devotee and not from a professional reciter. Right? So we hear from Srila Prabhupada how he's given the acharyas. Then this is the viewpoint we look. If we take these and convert them into modern ways of thinking, we don't really get the benefit. But we take them as it is, how the acharyas give us, then we get this benefit. Then we're freed from conditional existence. One who rises from bed early in the morning and recites this history of Chittaketu, controlling his words and mind and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will return home back to Godhead without difficulty. 38-41. So then, Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17-28. Narayana parasadave nakutaschana bidyati swarga pavarga nadakeshvapi tularta darshinaha. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Right? So that's the position we're trying to get to. Right? We engage whatever we have in the Lord's service. So we can see is that two devotees on this platform, Lord Shiva, he's sitting there in the assembly with his wife, and Chittaketu is in the airplane with a whole bunch of Vidyadharis. So it's not that facilities aren't there for devotees. It's just they're not interested in them for material benefit. So, in other words, what Lord Shiva's sitting with his wife, embracing her in the assembly of sadhus, what's the point? What's he doing? Right? Why is he there? Right? Is he just one of the guys and he's sitting in the back and, you know, nuzzling with his wife? No, he's the guy who's giving the lecture. So he's just discussing transcendental subject matter. What's Chittaketu doing in the airplane with all the Vidyadharis? They're doing Harinam Samkirtan. That's the whole point. That's the problem. You know, they would definitely be banned. You know, like that. Chittaketu would not be able to lead any kirtans. Yeah, and she really wouldn't be able to give any Bhagavatam classes. Yeah, so. Yes. That's the problem with the modern perspective. Like that. You know, Narad Muni doesn't respect other people's, you know, raising of their children. He would be banned. Brahma would be banned. Shiva's banned, you know, so. Yeah. So, yes, there's a problem. Okay, let's see what we have here. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, prescribed duties for mankind. Right, so these are the prescribed duties, right? We were discussing before, we could say, no, but all the prescribed duties are more brought out in the fourth canto and some in the fifth. But actually, no, the prescribed duties for mankind is to become God conscious. That's the real duties. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if you look at it from the paravidya, the transcendental position, then it has meaning. Okay? So then in this one that we have chapter 18, Diti vows to kill King Indra, right? He always gets it, right? You know, because of his material desire, he always, you know, gets some problem. And then performance of the Pumsavana ritualistic ceremony in chapter 19. Okay, preface. Chapter 17 picks up where sixth chapter of this canto left off, delineating the descendants of Aditi. Due to the mention of Tvashta in the sixth chapter, the story of Vritrasura and then his previous life as King Chittaketu was told. Now the storyline comes back on track with Aditi's dynasty, who are also known as the Devatas or demigods, as well as the dynasty coming from her sister, Diti, whose descendants are also known as the Daityas or demons. Chapter 18. Diti vows to kill King Indra, Pratigya. The general tendency of anyone within this material world is to be envious, and therefore to become a Krishna-conscious person, one must curb this tendency. Because, right? You know, in other words, devotees are non-envious. So therefore, since in the material world everybody tends to be envious, we have to actually control that. That's what it was meaning before by we perform our duties in goodness and try to cultivate these good qualities. Right? So we curb the bad ones, we try to cultivate the good ones. Yes.
It's just an observation. Normally dynasties are known by like the men who lead them, but in this case they're Adityas and Daityas. They're known by the woman who spawned.
Because there's one father and I think 27 wives, so therefore you would want to do it by the wives.
Kashyapa, right?
Yeah, Kashyapa. Yeah. Like that, so. Yes, but it's still, it's whoever's the prominent. So in other words, that's why sometimes then I think it's said you can say, you know, for us, that generally we'll use Achyuta Gotra, but we could technically say Kashyapa Gotra, because we come in the demoniac line. So we could use that as a, you know, because if you come within the human, you know, Varnas, then you can say, you know, what Prajapati you're from. But because we're coming from mixes of mixes of mixes, we can't say where we're from. You know, because the time where we might have had a connection or somebody in our line might have known were the ones that fled India when Parasaram made a tour. Right? Basically speaking. Right? You know? And so then because of that, then we have no idea, because it's been millions of years since, you know, anyone in our family knew what their gotra was. So, therefore, we can say it's coming down from these lower forms of life like that, that are there, you know, created by Kashyapa and, you know, like that. And so, which exact wife, you know, whether it's Danu's or, you know, Danu or Diti or whoever else, therefore, we can just say Kashyapa. But generally, we just use Achyuta because that's connected with devotional service. So, the other one's not so important for us, you know. Someone knows it, it's used in marriage ceremony, but otherwise then we don't worry about it. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Nandiki, Jai Nitya Gaura Prabhupada.